Thank you for joining us for the third podcast episode in a five-part series brought to you by the 2020 Influential Women in Legal Tech. Today, we bring back three of the five named 2020 women as they discuss how the client behavior has changed. I'm so excited that you're listening in as once again, we are bringing you a truly global episode with speakers from Uganda, South Africa, and Spain. Thank you, Alice, Maria, and Jackie for joining us today. Without further ado, I pass the microphone on to Maria, who is the lead interviewer for today's episode. Maria, would you like to get us started?
Thank you, Sam, for introducing us to the audience. And welcome to everybody. And super happy to be the person asking Jackie and Alice their views on such a fascinating topic as how is the client behavior today? Has it changed? When we talk about clients, we can probably divide them in two big categories, corporations and private clients. And we are super lucky because Jackie and Alice are working in these two different groups of clients. So they are fantastic speakers to give us a clear view of what is happening with them. So let's start with the first question. Jackie, what is your point of view on legal services buying characteristics? How are clients? Are they different than 5 years ago? When we say five, it could be two or three because things change very fast. So we just want to know, are you noticing big changes in how clients buy legal services?
Maria, I would think most definitely, and it's without a doubt been aggravated by COVID. You know, we're seeing it all over. There's a lot of alternative service providers that have sprung up, new laws taking off, and there's a lot of transitional changes happening in the industry. I think that, I mean, obviously we've been in a state of flux for a very long time, but what I'm seeing now is how the practice of law is kind of shifting from the lawyer framework that we've always had to a more customer-centric marketplace. Now, this is obviously as a result of all these additional players into the marketplace. Recently, I had a look at McKinsey because they've done an interesting thing through COVID where they are tracking the consumer sentiment changes, especially during COVID, but they're doing it over 45 countries. And I think this is very relevant for where we are because it's taken a lot of what I've read in the changes in how people are buying law, wanting to interact with law, and it kind of summarized it for me. One of the sentiments that they mention is a shift to value. And I think COVID has again made that very, very relevant for us. People are way more cautious about what they are buying, and their buying power is quite a critical thing at the moment. And this is across the world as economies are suffering in their different realities. So there's definitely a major shift on value for what we are buying. And we are currently just purchasing essentials. Luckily, the law is an essential, but it's still, there's various services that we are seeing more of. Another thing that McKinsey picked up was a shock to loyalty. And I think that goes hand in hand with what's happening. A lot of people are starting to break their loyal relationships and looking for other providers that are offering either more innovative things, things with greater value. And interestingly, when they tracked them, they said that people that are moving away during COVID, 65% of the respondents had indicated that they will definitely stay with their new providers or look elsewhere. They are not returning to their older providers. Then lastly is kind of the homebody economy that started, which marries very well with the digital world that we are seeing. So I think from all the research we have seen is the digital legal economy is growing by leaps and bounds every year globally and in our different jurisdictions as well. It's estimated to be a $1 trillion industry by, I think it was 2025, if I remember correctly. And so we're definitely seeing all of that online space happening. So given all of these, our consumers are definitely buying law in a way different way because their decision into the purchase is changing. That's from a private perspective. These are clients that are going online looking for their divorces, looking for a will, and and those aspects. From our perspective.
Thank you, Jackie. Alice, do you want to give us your point of view on how our corporate clients, are they buying differently? Are they looking for other things when they look for legal services?
Yeah, definitely. What I see now most is most clients are looking for lawyers who understand their business needs. Before, it all used to be, this is what the law is, this is what the law says, and you get into some kind of fist fight with either the other team. And clients, I think, enjoyed the whole idea of having a great litigation team that, well, if that this is what the law says, then we'll go to court and argue it out. But now you find that most clients are more interested in, do you understand my business? How can you help me to thrive, as opposed to getting entangled in long, protracted litigation? So when you're able to understand those clients' needs, as opposed to adhering to the strict principles of law, then most clients easily wear out and they're just not able to appreciate lawyers entangled in, you understand, in what the law is and all that. Another thing I realized, I think what Jackie mentioned, is definitely the use of technology. Because imagine if you have a client who uses a specific type of technology, and then you walk in their office with very old, the best thing example I'd give you, imagine a client walking in your office and you're using a typewriter. They would definitely get shocked, right? They would just walk away. So clients, what I've realized is that what kind of technologies actually are you using as a lawyer in terms of delivering services? To them, it's more of how fast actually can you, how cost efficient can you be? They're no longer interested in billable hours. They will want fixed reps. They would want you to use the most recent or advanced technology to be able to deliver legal services. So if you're able to actually, if you can prove that we have this type of technology, which will maybe take you maybe 7 hours or 20 hours or a week, we're able to deliver on a particular transaction within hours or a couple of days, then they will definitely be happy. Frequent communication is also extremely key. Long time ago, lawyers used to have, it was always about the way the lawyer wanted to communicate with their client. I'm not available, leave a message, and most of them will get back to you whenever I am. But now, clients appreciate quick communication, even though it's just send a very simple note acknowledging that you have you're working on their transaction or giving them update. It's just that frequency and just being actually available to respond to their needs.
Thank you, Alice. Really interesting. During this last month, two institutions have published the results of the interviews they made to big panels. In the case of Martindale Avo, they interviewed over 3,000 people in the winter, and in the month of March 2020, they published the results. And in the case of the United Kingdom panel for legal services consumers, they also interviewed around 3,000 people, and they published the results in August 2020. In both cases, they gave similar information. Consumers said similar things about the criteria they use to choose a lawyer. And although there are some differences between the Canadian-American market and the UK market, reputation, price, location, speed are relevant criteria. Could you both give us your point of view on these criteria? Which are the most relevant? Why are they relevant? What happens in your own countries?
Usually the criteria actually they do follow is how available you are. When they reach out to most lawyers, it's more through certain rankings. It could be through someone having referred you or having had an experience working on a certain transaction. I think that's also extremely key. That has happened to me a lot, where you work on one transaction and then either because that transaction is listed somewhere and contacts you. Things take a very, very long time to get done. We have a lot of bureaucracy in Uganda, but when you manage their kind of expectations, and you're very open and very clear about what they should be expecting, it also definitely helps a great deal.
I think Alice has mentioned so many valuable aspects of it. I think it's also it's important to say that the law is a very wide thing, and we have so many different people buying the law. So obviously, it changes a lot. You know, it's like, what food do you buy? It depends on whether you're in the vegan lifestyle or in what your taste is for. I remember something very, I don't know, it's always stuck in my mind. A conference I attended in Amsterdam, I think at the beginning of the year before lockdown came, or was it last year? There was a guy, I don't know if you know him, Tom Nightingale from Nissus Consulting. So he did a survey very similar to what you are mentioning, Maria, on thousands of firms from the US and the UK and across Europe. And it was mapped on what criteria they use. And what was interesting to me are that the greatest drivers from his finding was personal chemistry, problem solving, and strategic thinking. So I think by now we all know that those are aspects that people are using when they are looking for a lawyer and what they want for a lawyer. What was interesting was what the lowest drivers are, what they really don't care about in choosing a lawyer. And that was technology, offices, and associated materials. Now, this came up for me because I think through COVID, we've had such a focus on technology and all lawyers are looking at technology, but we've got to realize that our customers don't really see technology as a shiny anything. To them, it is just an expected tool that you are using to improve your service. But what you use, how you, is really none of their concern. They still want that human front end of you as a person and the chemistry that they can build with you. And I think, Alice, you agreed with me, or you say the same, in that's why they return to you, because they return for that chemistry and the way that you are solving their problems for them, and how you build a relationship with them. So I think those things are most relevant.
It's very interesting, but let me ask you one more question. When you are selling virtual legal services, how do you build chemistry, or how this chemistry...
But are we not building chemistry? I mean, take the three of us. We have never met each other.
Yeah.
And we have spent some time online. We are getting a sense for personality, even yes. though it is not in physical form. Yes. So I think that chemistry can still exist with your clients, even if it is online or through different mediums. I think you can feel that that the lawyer is customer-centric, has your problem yes. at heart, and the way that yes. they are going about it is in a warmer fashion, where you are feeling cared for and you are feeling top of mind for the lawyer. And I think that is what they mean.
It's really interesting what you're saying. And let me tell you something I learned, like probably when I started working in the legal tech field 9 years ago, there was a lawyer who had set up one of the first marketplaces that there were here. It was called El Abogado something. I can't remember the precise name. And this guy hired me to help him with communications. And I was asking him once, like he had like a 200 cases at that time only in the platform. And I asked him, so how is the profile of the lawyer who is getting the cases? Because the way it works is that clients put their problems there and all the lawyers of the platform could establish a conversation with a chat. So I said, who gets the client? He said, well, 70% of the cases are won by 30% of the client or the lawyers. And I said, how are these lawyers? And he said, they have empathy. And I said then to him, so how is this empathy, online empathy? He said, the way they write in the chat. So the way they answer the client, the way they tell the client that they understand what is happening and that. And I think it's very interesting to think and to start practicing that kind of empathy, which, for instance, nowadays when we have to use so much the video, I think the camera helps for empathy, you know? sometimes a lot of people, more and more people are like not even getting dressed, you know, and working in the dark of the video cameras. But I think that that's really important to start thinking which are the points that make the difference in coming or having a chemistry online.
But I think you are so right. But that's again because you are thinking of the customer. So you are thinking of your clients and what their experience of your service is. And I think, yes, Alice, you said it right at the start of thinking about what they want. You've got to be in their shoes. And I think that makes the difference. And that does help the chemistry.
So let's go for the last question. Do lawyers map the client journey? And do they understand the touch points when they render services? And maybe I would ask you both any of you to explain our audience what exactly is a client journey, customer journey, and what do we understand when we say service touch points? Because that's a concept that for us who like marketing is like known, but maybe for some of the lawyers that hear us, it's not such a common or understandable thing.
I think it ties into exactly what we are saying now of changing your mindset to look at the client experience, their perception of the service. So when we do client mapping at our workplace, we usually do it through workshops, collective workshops with some of the team members. And we take that client experience touch points usually broadly into five main journey areas. And the first one is the awareness. Before your client has even interacted with you, what made them aware of you? So this would be your social media, you know, your web presence or any other presence that you would have. And what is that experience for them when they are interacting with that? What are they seeing? What are they learning from you? Then our second area of focus is usually what makes them consider you. So this is where your reputation comes into play. As we're moving online, things like Google reviews and that online reputational management becomes a very important aspect as well. And then they get to interacting with you for the first time where they're going to buy your service. What is that process? What is that interaction with them? How easy is it for them to make an appointment, get through to you? What happens to them when they do that? Is it easy to phone the practice? Is it easy to make an appointment? How is this process going? And then engagement, that would be your longer case flow phase that you have with them. This is obviously the biggest component of the customer journey with you. And Alice, you also mentioned it earlier, that's one aspect that we focus on a lot here is constant feedback because clients are wanting something different here. So we use a lot of tools to make sure at certain points they get automated feedback, they get phoned from our customer experience department, that we are catering for all different customers at different intervals of a legal case. And then your last touch point, well, not touch point, but area where you have touch points is their ongoing relationship with you. So once a matter has been finalized, how do you retain that client and what are you offering them? What is that experience with your firm? So those are the broad aspects that we look at when we map it. So in all of those five different areas, you are going to manage the different touch point. Now, a touch point could be anything from the way that they contact you, from the way that they correspond with you. Is it an easy experience? What are their feelings about it? So customer surveys help here, workshops with your clients help here, but then as well, a lot of data can help you here. If you have a proper data section or sector at your work, this is really an aspect where you can mine down and find a lot of valuable input and continuously improve the journey for the customer.
Thank you, Yaki. Alice, give us your point of view on client journey and service touch points with corporate clients. Which are the main ones, the touch points? How is the client journey in a firm like yours?
Of course, it varies from client to client, but the first interaction, of course, usually is what you have to appreciate, like what Jackie has said. How did they contact you? The firm I work for, it's a lot of referrals, you know, one client referring another. And So I think for us, because that is like the norm, then you have to also understand, why did actually someone refer that client to you? So I mean, you did something good for that client. So who is that person who referred you? How does it relate with them? Because for us, actually, referrals, we refer to them as clients, because someone can. And we would want them, first of all, to understand, why did we deserve this kind of referral? And how can actually we trace it back to make sure there are more referrals, that it's just not one referral, right? And then from there, how do you quickly respond to the client's need? Oh, sorry, before you actually respond to that, is that how do you understand the client's needs? Are the client's needs very, very clear to you? And then what kind of strategy are you laying to make sure that the client's needs actually are going to be addressed? In many cases, you find lawyers responding to completely different needs. The client wants this, and then they get a completely different solution. So I think always going back and following the journey, when this client walked in, what did they want from me? And most importantly, can I actually give them more than they asked for? Because usually that gets you on a road to get more referrals from that particular client, giving them more than what they expected. Like I mentioned earlier, clients think either disputes and very, very, very expensive or very costly. So how are you able to actually bring down the costs for this client, but at the same time deliver beyond the expectations?
But very few firms that I know actually actively track that experience for their customers, or even survey it, or have something as basic as an NPS score. So there's definitely a lot of room for work in that segment.
I agree. I think that law firms in general haven't been devoted resources to understanding their clients, their needs, their touch points. So I think that there is a lot of work to do. Moreover, now that, as we have seen, habits are changing and clients are different. And now I think that there is no excuse to start devoting time to trying to understand what your clients need somewhat and want. So ladies, it has been really my pleasure to moderate you. I would love to finish with a brief conclusion by both of you.
I think the most important thing, as much as there might be studies on customers and we can take notice of these trends, the most critical thing for you as a firm to do is to start speaking to your clients and to understand your specific clients in your jurisdiction with the cultures of your company, your firm, or the country where you are living in, or the city where you are living in, because these do differ. So it's important to focus on your own clients and really engage with them to understand what they want. And then you augment your service to continuously adapt to the needs of your specific clients.
Thank you, Jackie. Alice, your advice, your sentence?
To me, again, I think Jackie has summarized it. I think it's extremely important to understand our client needs before you find any solution for the client. Because when you understand the client's needs and then put yourself in the client, in the client's shoes, I find that you're able to actually to deliver better and all over and above the client's expectations.
Okay, so just as a brief conclusion of this session, we have understood that law firms, lawyers need to center their efforts in customer needs. COVID is changing consumer sentiments, consumer habits. There is a shift on value. We have to understand what really wants the client and offer it to them. And to do that, listening to the client, understanding the needs, speaking with the client is essential. Technology is not a goal, but the means to get to the goal, which is making our clients happy. And with this, I would like to end this session. Thank you so much to all of you. Thank you so much to ILTA for letting us women that want to influence and work every day to influence for having us here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jackie, Alice, and Maria, for taking us through an engaging conversation around how the client behavior has changed. I thoroughly enjoyed hearing your unique perspectives and how things are similar as well as different across South Africa, Uganda, and Spain. For those listening in today, please keep an eye out for more episodes brought to you by the 2020 Influential Women in Legal Tech Honorees and produced by the International Legal Technology Association.